Blog Talk Radio.
Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. I'm here with my co-host, Martin C. You want to come on in and introduce yourself, Martin?
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, James.
Well, yes,
how's your Sunday going?
Well, good. It's almost over, but that's okay, too. Time passes,
exactly.
And that's one thing I love about time. It does pass.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Okay, so our topic for tonight is going to be the American African-Americans, and the American justice system. But before we go into our topic, we're going to have our Dollhouse announcements told to us by Angela Royale, Dollhouse Radio's executive producer, assistant executive producer. Sorry about that. So, Dollhouse announcements.
You are tuned in to Dollhouse Radio, the hottest station on the net.
We air live 7 days a week with 17 shows hosted by the sexiest host. Find out more about the Dollhouse Radio family by visiting our website at www.dollhouseradio.com. Find out the latest celebrity and adult entertainment gossip and indie music news on our Hot Sugar Block daily on the Dollhouse Radio website. Dollhouse Radio is home of the indie artists. We play majority indie music and very few major artists. Indie artists, email your music submissions to dollhouseradiomusic@gmail.com. All music submissions must contain a bio or one sheet, promotional photo, and your music in MP3 format. Or purchase one of our promo packages available to you on our website. Businesses and promoters looking to advertise your brand or event on Dollhouse Radio, email your inquiries to Head of Promotions at Brian, that's B-R-I-A-N, DollhouseRadio@gmail.com. Our Spotlight Artists of the Month are Sheree Laree, Nuria Afonso, Heroin, Raphael, Carla Page, Young Peach, and Mila J. Don't miss all the tea Hot Sugar is dishing out. Be sure to follow our Hot Sugar Instagram page at IG_HotSugar. Keep up with everything Dollhouse Radio by following us on Twitter at Dollhouse_Radio. And be sure to sign up on our mailing list on the website. And now, back to your program.
Okay, welcome back to Urban Society. Let me give out our caller number first of all. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And if you want to talk to us here on Urban Society, you must press 1 to talk. If you don't press 1, you'll only be in listening mode, which is a good thing too. But a better thing is to talk with us. Okay, so as we're moving right along, I also do want to point out a anniversary situation. And that anniversary situation is that this is the, how can I put it, the month of May is 1 year that Urban Society has been on here on Dollhouse Radio. We
All
have
right,
started,
cue the clapping. Cue the clapping.
Oh, well, we don't have that, but I'm quite sure that we're clapping in our minds. Yes.
I'm clapping in the background.
Okay, good. Because the situation is that Urban Society began.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay,
Thank you, producer.
Very much so. So as I was saying, the Urban Society began 1 year ago this month on May 17th. And as we know, May 17th is also when the Supreme Court pronounced segregation of schools in America unconstitutional. And
Brown versus Board of Education, yes,
exactly,
sir.
Exactly. And as was mentioned previously on our last show, May 17th was also our producer's birthday, Indy Morrell. So, I mean, a lot of things happening on 17 May or May 17th. And a lot of
yes.
things, no doubt, will continue to happen on May 17th. God bless for that. So, we're moving right along still. Second, I get my stuff together here. But before we do move along, I wanted to, there's a poem, another poem. I have read some poetry. I haven't read any in a while now, but that's another story. But I want to get back into reading. But things, you know how things happen, and you just fall out of certain situations of doing things and hope to get back to them. But anyway, William Shakespeare, one of my favorite, well, he's not really one of my favorite authors, nor one of my favorite poets, but I like him. I have read some of his works. And a poem that I want to read here tonight, I think is fitting with our topic, African Americans and the justice system. I think it's fitting there. This comes from the play entitled Romeo and Juliet. And at this point, Romeo and his friend Benvolio, I think that's his name, Benvolio, they come upon a scene wherein there had been a fight. And Romeo says, "O me, what fray was here? Yet tell me not, for I have heard it all." Let me back up there. "O me, what fray was here? Yet tell me not, for I have heard it all. Here's much to do with hate, but more with love. Why then, O brawling love, O loving hate, O anything of nothing first create, O heavy lightness, serious vanity, misshaping chaos of well-seeming forms, feather of lead, bright smoke, cold fire, sick health, still waking sleep. This is not what it is. This love I feel, that feel no love in this. I know some might say, as Romeo has said, even after this, he asks his friend Benvolio, dost thou not laugh? Because what did he say there? He said basically a whole lot of convoluted things, basically. A lot of things that seemed to make sense but didn't make sense.
True.
And I'm saying, yes, so I'm saying that to say that often, I will say, I'll put it this way, once we do acquire consciousness as we grow up mentally as well as physically, we do come into situations that we find often don't make no sense at all. But yet we have to try and make sense of what we are in. So, with that having been said, let us go on into, or before that, I don't really want to go into the topic right now because there are some other things that I wanted to have brought up first. I don't know, Martin, if you are on Facebook or not, but recently on Facebook, I seen this posting by one of my Facebook friends. It was on this, I think she's a black comedian. She was talking about the blackface performance that the comedian Sarah Silverman had done. Have you ever heard of Sarah Silverman?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I think she's funny, but she's funny to the point of just stupid funny. She just does things that you would think that this girl is out of her effing mind. But some of the things she does is funny. And the thing is, I happen to have also seen that blackface routine that she did. Now, being a conscious black person, I didn't like that. I like most things that she has done. Not all things, but most things. And that was one of the things I didn't like. However, I have first seen that production done maybe 4 or 5 years ago. But nobody said nothing then. But it's now 2015, and now this black comedian woman, I forget her name right now, unfortunately, but she was in a interview setting on a stage, she was, with about four other people and a moderator, and taking questions from the audience. And there was some guy in the audience, white guy, who was pushing back on her having said that she felt by Sarah Silverman doing that blackface routine that Sarah Silverman was portraying her racism. And now the guy in the audience disagreed with that. And,
right.
And basically he disagreed by throwing in the situation that, well, such as, how can it really be racist when you had blacks back then doing the blackface routine also? It's like he was telling her that, you know, you just don't understand what Sarah Silverman had done. Oh, but she came back on him hard. And a lot of people were saying that she was really, really abusive to him. But then again, I mean, he was also abusive to her, as if telling her that her being black, she don't know what racism is. Or just because she's black, that doesn't give her credentials to know what racism is, which was really ludicrous, Bo, but she came down on him hard, you know. But I wanted to bring that up. But like, just asking, you know, although blacks did do the blackface routine also, we can't, or would you say that guy's argument was valid in saying that Sarah Silverman, although she is white and did do the blackface routine in this day, that she shouldn't be considered racist?
Well, you know, the blackface routine goes all the way back, for those that didn't know, it goes all the way back to what they call vaudeville back in the 20s and 30s.
But it goes further, than that.
And it even goes back further than that. But I think that's probably where it reached its zenith of popularity when people were back in the vaudeville days where, you know, you had guy, what was the famous white actor? I can't think of his name.
Yo, that guy Al Jolson sang that song.
Al Jolson, yes.
Mammy.
Sang the Mammy song.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, no one, of course, would emulate these days, would emulate the, you know, the performance of Al Jolson. It's been, you know, universally panned at this point where, you know, it's not very, as they would say, politically correct for anybody to, you know, to dress in blackface. I know Whoopi Goldberg got in trouble. She was dating Ted Danson.
But okay, Martin, hold that thought there. We're going to come back to this because right now we have to take our break. It's like 15 minutes to the hour, and we're going to have a song by Sheree Lurie entitled Mirage. But hold that thought. We're going to be on this issue for a few more minutes. So we're going to hear Sheree Lurie in a song called Mirage. We'll be right back. Here on India Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to, well, me, James Jones, and my co-host, Martin C. We're on the topic right now of blackface, and I do have the name of that woman, the woman comedian. Her last name is Crystal, C-R-I-S-S-L-E, and she does some kind of a broadcast that she does on something called The Read. But anyway, so Martin, you were lastly saying...
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, that you know, Ted Danson got in trouble with that some years ago when he and Whoopi showed up at something and he had blackface on and she had on blackface. Hmm. And they took a beating in the press because of that.
Well,
but
go ahead.
No, I was just saying, but you know, they took a beating in the press because of that. as I thought they should.
Well,
but,
yeah, I would agree.
But,
well, they should have.
But, you know, some, I don't think anybody should be doing the blackface. Number one, people don't understand that the blackface was done mainly, it began as a means of, you know, degrading the black man. And then later on, I think a lot of people were using it as a means of, you know, not degrading the black man, but anyway, basically of using it as a sense of irony. You know,
usually
those, if you notice a lot of those old movies where, you know, you had the brother out there bugging his eyes out looking crazy. If you notice that sometimes that brother ended up making the white man look like a fool, and then he walking away with his eyes all bugged up like they didn't even get it. And a lot of people didn't catch that.
Well, that's one thing, but the issue is, well, the issue then was, as a lot of blacks who would see that would ask the question, why are we being represented like that? You know,
true.
all the time. That was an issue then, you know. So, you know, it was a thing about, you know, representation. You know, how are we as a people being represented? And then again, we weren't being represented by ourselves, but we were being represented by someone else's,
right,
representation,
by someone else's
of
point
us.
Of view, exactly.
And, you know, that was the crux of that issue. And, well, it's a long story there. But like, going back into the minstrel thing, you know, after having seen this, after that thing had been put on my Facebook wall, I happened to have, because I knew that blackface had been started by white men, entertainers, but I hadn't known when. But let me tell you, I was surprised to have found out that it actually started as far back as in the 1840s. And I'm thinking,
yeah,
1840s, black people were slaves then. So in a real sense, I mean, not only were they, as you had put it, also, as you had said, what was the word you had used? You had used, well, one word was irony, and then
yeah,
the word before then. But anyway, I can't think of the word that you had used then, because I'm also thinking about what I'm going to say here. And to me, it was them, you know, well like it was basically whites making fun of not just black people, but making fun in spite of the condition that black people were in. Black people then were actually slaves, suffering.
Yeah.
And you
but,
know,
but you know something? And as the story of Solomon Northrop would also tell you, there were some of us that were also not slaves who were actually going to these shows and watching these shows also.
But yes,
that's what a lot of people also don't know.
But
that there were a number of blacks who were in the North who were free.
But well, that's also true. But like, that doesn't, you know, how can I put it? That doesn't lessen the fact that like the minstrel performers were in fact, you know, making fun of slaves. I mean,
oh,
they're,
yeah, and you know something, that even goes back to goes back to Shakespeare's time. A lot of people don't realize that Shakespeare was very, very close to ending up in the Tower. And once you ended up in the Tower, yeah, your chances of having a head on by the end of the day was probably going to be real, real slim at that point. But yeah, the Europeans have had a long history of the kind of, you know, going, like I said, going back to Shakespeare, and he was making fun of the royals, you know. And then you had some, you know, Henry VIII, he commissioned, you know, plays to denigrate the religious aristocracy, basically the Church of Rome. He used his people. They put shows up there basically denigrating the church.
Okay,
he was doing through his Reformation. Then in the, you know, during the middle of like in the 30s and 40s, Then it began, the Jews got their turn to get denigrated. So it's Europeans have a long history of denigrating and using, you know, shows and plays to, you know, take shots at sometimes at the powerful, sometimes at the powerless.
I hear what you're saying there, but I think that's going elsewhere into what the situation of blackface was about and basically is about. Because, well, again, what I'm saying, or what I said, as I said there, and that is that you know, these European performers, white American performers, they were, in fact, just, you know, totally lacking in empathy for the people whom they were portraying. They seen them, the situation there is that they saw all that, the mass of black people at that point in time, as just funny. I mean, and just saying, that type attitude is seen today also, wherein whenever they see someone black, they just start laughing, like they see something funny, and there's not a damn thing funny. But like, I'm just saying, though, and I just found it, it was, to me, interesting that stuff came about in the 1840s. I said, damn, they were laughing at us like that then? Oh, it's just awful. It's just ludicrous. It's just ludicrous. Just ludicrous. And, well, let me not go there, because I was going to say something about that word ludicrous, okay? Yeah, but
hey,
anyway.
I'm a big fan of Luda.
Well, okay, being that you are, let me say this then, you know, okay, because I'm on Facebook often, and then like, I'm writing stuff on there somewhat often, too, and sometimes I make want to use a word that I don't have the proper spelling for, or think I don't have the proper spelling for. Now, concerning the word ludicrous, okay, I'll use my phone and, you know, speak into the dictionary app and say ludicrous, wanting the proper spelling. And it will give me the spelling of ludicrous, and I'll say, wait, that don't look like the word the way ludicrous should be spelled. And then ludicrous, the rapper, will pop up. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? Anyway, I got to use my dictionary for the proper spelling of ludicrous. And it turns out that, yes, in the dictionary is the proper spelling for ludicrous. But when you use the app on your phone, when you speak in the word ludicrous, ludicrous pops up. And I just wonder, why do they do that? But, again.
Hey, pop culture rules the day, unfortunately.
So you think that's the explanation?
Hey, pop culture rules the day, man. You didn't know?
So that's the explanation for that?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's all the one we got.
Okay, so then let's go on into our main topic then, which is African-Americans and the justice system. So,
oh yeah, this is gonna be a biggie right here.
So okay, so
I don't even know where we start.
Well, that was gonna be my question to you. Where do you want to start in there?
I mean, hold on. I mean, we can start anywhere. I mean, we can start with the Scottsboro Boys.
Okay,
you know,
or
one of the original, you know, miscarriages of justice. You can pick out a whole lot of them. You know, there's a lot of brothers. How about To Kill a Mockingbird, which was actually on yesterday, and I actually sat down and watched it. You know, the late great
movie.
Gregory Peck,
mm-hmm.
Moses Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely a brilliant movie. It was a brilliant book. It was definitely, if you ever read the book, if you ever saw the movie, it was not a happy ending.
No, I didn't read the book. I saw the movie.
It was definitely not a happy ending, and actually it was a true story. The little girl that plays Scout in there is based upon the woman who actually wrote, you know, she actually wrote the book. It was basically based upon her life. And
To
Kill a Mockingbird.
But I thought that man had wrote that that early Southern writer, I forget his name right now, he was really popular back then.
No, it was actually a woman that wrote To Kill a Mockingbird.
Uh-huh. But the thing is, I never read the book, and I don't think I really wanted to read the book.
It was a beautifully written story. It was it's a tough story if you've seen the movie. It's a tough story, but the words. It's something about reading it that they can't. I don't think they can almost never get it on the screen.
Well, true,
but,
because somehow or another, always the book is well better than the movie. I mean, we can say it like that. The book is better than the movie, and then 9 times out of 10, when they do the movie, they leave so many things out
exactly.
of the movie that's in the book. And
yeah, because you can't have a movie that's like 9 hours long. Yeah, you can't have a movie 9 hours long.
Well, no,
how we
but
doing on time? How we doing on breaks?
Well, okay, we still have time.
Okay, but To Kill a Mockingbird, and of course, for those who are aware, the Scottsboro Boys, that was a case where you had a bunch of brothers who got into a fight with some white guys on the train, and I guess threw them off the train. These brothers were accused of rape and robbery, and they were convicted. And they were sentenced to death by a all-white jury.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And these brothers were a symbol, an early symbol in the civil rights movement because of the massive injustice. But a lot of people in the South were used to those kind of injustices. The late, great artist Billie Holiday, one of her greatest songs she ever wrote was a song called Strange Fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And the song of Strange Fruit was referring to the men that she saw lynched as she traveled through the South. Billie Holiday really didn't like America very too much. Traveling to the South and seeing men lynched, it changed her forever. And that's when she wrote Strange Fruit. If you listen to that song, you can hear the haunting, just the haunting in her voice as she's singing the words to that song.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can listen to Billie Holiday. I have listened to her music, and I guess basically it was through coming to know that she had made that particular record, Strange Fruit, you know, in my early reading. And I thought, well, whatever. So I figured, you know, let me listen to that if I can. And somehow or another, I happen to have came upon that record. And I heard it, and it's sad. But still, with me, I felt that even though I heard that when I heard it, because that was at a time also when I was reading a lot of poetry, and I thought, you know, she ought to be, well, to me, being a critic or whatever, I'm thinking that, you know, she should have been more explicit, or there should have been, to me, more anger. But then again, that's why I say, well, like, I want to say, well, I'm just going to say it. I want to say God bless rap, but not rap per se, but like more so God bless those rappers like Public Enemy and Tupac Shakur. I'll put it like that, because they came up with a certain aggressiveness in their tone of delivery and saying what they were saying with their poetry, which was a reason that I was really turned off from traditional poetry written by, you know, people like like who? Let's say Langston Hughes. He's good. I will say that. And I read a lot of him. But I just felt, you know, there should be more there. And again, when rap came out, especially with Public Enemy and then Tupac Shakur, well, matter of fact, I'll even back him and say even Run DMC. It's not what Run DMC said, in my opinion, but it's the way they said what they would. There was a certain aggressiveness in their tone, even though, as I really began to listen to them, I'm thinking, damn, these guys are basically speaking nursery rhymes. But there was some aggressiveness in their tones.
Well, you know something?
Go ahead.
I feel what you're saying, but you know something? When you had guys like KRS-One, Public Enemy, I didn't hear so much as an anger. I heard more of a, you know, a righteous growling. I don't think they really had to yell then.
Well, no, I'm not talking about yelling.
They were, you know.
No,
you know,
I mean,
you're saying aggressive. I'm saying they really didn't need, those guys really didn't need to be aggressive, because they were all about speaking knowledge And they wanted everybody to understand exactly what they say. Every time, you know, you hear KRS-One rap something, you know exactly what he's saying. And before you know, you're like, he has you thinking. And I think that was really part of that movement back then. And, you know, in the 80s when it came to hip-hop, it was a consciousness movement.
Well, that's what I was going to say here. That's when they could really put the word consciousness on or in rap. But right now, we're going to have to go to our second break. It's like 5 after the hour, and we're going to have a song now from Split Star featuring Busta Rhymes and Bugs Calhoun. The song is entitled Big Rings. Split Star, Busta Rhymes, and Bugs Calhoun. Big Rings.
Big rings.
You would think I play
rings.
Ball for these big rings. You would think I play ball for these big rings. You would think I play ball for these big rings.
Nah, niggas
you
be hoping that this type of shit ain't soon.
Big rings. You would think
niggas be hoping that I stop fucking their ass up soon. Well, that shit ain't happening no time soon. Paper rock conglomerate, yo. Now watch me fuck shit up again until the dance done.
Damn, son.
So many zeros in my checks, can you imagine when I cash one? Pass some of them bottles around like we a man. Pardon my team for pulling up in couple Aston Martins and I'm farting and I'm shitting on you niggas like, look what we be starting. Tell you niggas get it right. Bottles full of arson. Sorry niggas need a light. Prior to the heat, I might lock shit down a little. From stepping in the spot, I hope you don't mind disrespecting. These bitches call me Dolce Rhymes and you don't say I'm. The pressure you don't mess with, press up on you niggas, turn your face into a press kit. Yeah, you heard the messenger. Get with the commissioner. Hot shit, that's why I walk with a fire extinguisher. Double shot of Trone, so we call that shit a Dillinger. 40 karat yellow diamond, pinky ring will kill him, bro.
You would think I play ball for these big rings. You would think I play ball for these big rings. You would think I play ball for these big rings. Think I play ball. Watch me do my thing. I'm like Gold Bugs McDonald. All these carrots in my ring. Sierra Leone stone. That costs a small fortune. But it ain't nothing to a general when he's bossing. Coming down the lane with rings. They never seen me and my team. We getting cream and looking so clean. You would think I was a player, Jabob, dude, Kareem.
Woo!
Hitting bands fast as part of my routine. Yeah.
You would think I play ball.
The way I do this, I ball the way I do this. I'm painting the town, riding. See me stunting in my new whip. Mashing on the gas with a pocket full of gas. They thinking it's D-Wade when I'm rolling down the Ave now. It's the go-getter, get more cheddar, general, but count so much numbers in my ledger, I could get a big ring for every day of the week. I got my jeweler like a doctor on call. You would think I play ball.
You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. For these play ball for these big ring. I put in work for these big rings. You gon' need a black card for these big rings. Tight words, got your boy rockin' iceberg. Julie hitting up my iPhone first serve. I ball like Doc Julius Earth. And when I shoot, I'm ahead, call me Larry Bird. I'm a legend in anything that you did already. In other words, everything you say in a cemetery. I ball spin it, 20 years I did it. I'm the whole mansion. Nigga, you just shittin', you can catch me in the club with my diamonds so loud. Can't play like nigga, turn your shit down. I bring life to buy, hard to buy. You cops are on the damn least to drive. But this you gonna need a little time, homie. This is big ring shit, not small money.
You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. For these play ball for these big rings. You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. You would think I play ball for these big ring ball. For these play ball for these big rings.
Okay, so are we done with that? It went off like that, I wasn't sure. But anyway, welcome back to Urban Society here on Dollhouse Radio. And
see, that was an aggressive song right there. That was exceptionally aggressive.
You think it was aggressive?
That was very aggressive.
In tone.
Anything with Busta Rhymes is, you know, aggressive.
See, that's what I mean, you know, in tone, but not in terms of what's being said. You see,
right.
That's what I meant in terms of Run DMC. their tone was aggressive. But like what they were saying, they was basically, you know, reciting nursery. Well, not all of their things were nursery rhymes, but like consider Beats to the Rhyme, that jam.
Oh yeah, Peter Piper.
Yeah. I mean, I said,
that
was
definitely some nursery rhymes right there.
Sure it was. I said, wow, but that's hip, you know. But going back into what we're talking about, but also let's go give the name of that song again. That came from Spliff Star featuring Busta Rhymes and Bugs Calhoun, entitled Big Rings. So, and our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. That's 646-595-4038. Give us a call and join the discussion. So
now, James, let's just dig deep into this topic now. What is your feelings about, you know, African Americans, especially now since we've had so many publicized incidents? What is your feeling about the criminal justice system per se, and you know how it affects African Americans?
Okay, well, first off, I'll put it this way. Okay, first off, in my thinking, the name itself is telling, and it's telling just what it is. It's a criminal justice system when it comes to us. That's what I would say to that. And then, okay, in light of these things that are happening, I would say that it's just a logical consequence of what is supposed to happen. Basically, because the law is not, I'll put it this way, the law is not the same for us as it is for others in this country. And it never has been. We can even go back to, okay, us being slaves in this country. I know there are some who are of the mindset that we can't really speak about that time, primarily because we, per law, weren't even considered people, persons, humans. But I reject that, because to hell with what the law said there. We are what we are, we were what we were, and still are, concerning our humanity, concerning our persons, and concerning our peoplehood. We've always been that. The law can't change that. The law can try to do that, but I'll put it this way. As Dr. King has said when he was here, he has said that basically when it comes to laws, he said an unjust law really is no law at all.
True.
So that's where I stand on that. And based upon everything, I mean, even take the stop and frisk things that they put into law, and understand how I just said that they put into law per the Constitution. That ought to be unconstitutional, because in a real sense, that goes against the 14th Amendment's I want to use the word declaration, but that's probably the wrong word. But that goes against what the 14th Amendment states. It talks about how a person, a citizen of this country, is supposed to be protected by all the laws and immunities of the laws of this country. The 14th Amendment was put in there for us. I'm saying for us because that's after the law then began to recognize our humanity. Some might even argue the point about not our humanity, but our personhood. But F that. It's still a thing about our humanity that's at stake here, and it's something that the law, I almost said somehow don't want to understand and or delineate. But then again, it's not the law per se, but it's those who interpret the law who have a problem with our humanity.
You know, I'm glad that you brought up the stop and frisk, because that's something it's sort of like one of those catch-22 situations. I remember And for those of us who are old enough to remember, if you've ever went to New York, you live in New York, so you know what I'm talking about, Dan.
Yes,
back in the 80s, I think it was when Dinkins, I think it was the last of the administration of Koch, Ed Koch, the famous late mayor of New York, Ed Koch, and David Dinkins, I think his administration. Times Square was an absolute hellhole. They had the peep shows. You remember this? You had the peep shows. You had the pimps, the hoes, the drug users, the homeless people. Times Square was literally, you couldn't take a family down there. If you go down to Times Square now, it is a complete 180. You got TV shows filming out of there now in the morning. I mean, Times Square is a bustling place where you have businesses, restaurants, people, the tourists, still one of the highest tourist, you know, attractions in the country, Times Square in New York.
Okay.
Go ahead. And I will say this, as much as Giuliani, a lot of people in New York, you know, had criticized Giuliani, the one thing that was 100% you could get just about everybody to agree to about two things about Giuliani. Number one, that he handled 9/11 incredibly, which he did. And number two, he cleaned up New York. A lot of people, the aggressive policing, the stop and frisk, is even for those like myself who have a lot of a libertarian streak in me. But you just can't argue the fact that stop and frisk brought the crime rate down. And there were even some in the black community, although they hated it, the main people who were the victims of the stop and frisk, their murder rate went down the most. The black and Hispanic community, the murder rate went down exponentially. But on the other hand, you had people who were pissed because they were getting stopped and frisked all the time. And then I heard a retired black New York City cop tell me this. He said it worked because all those guys who normally would have been carrying didn't know if they were ever going to be stopped. So they never wanted to get caught with something on them. So the crime rate goes down. Now you have the new mayor de Blasio. He gets rid of stop and frisk. All of a sudden now, the murder rate in New York is starting to go back up. Now, there's a nationwide trend of crime going down in the country. But in New York, in cities like New York, Chicago, Baltimore, D.C., the crime rate has gone through the roof. And the thing is, in each of these places, aggressive policing has been in some ways curtail.
But you know, I would push back on that because primarily I would push back on that because I don't see any of that what you had just said.
All you have to do is go to the Justice Department. The numbers don't lie.
The numbers don't lie.
The thing is, and there are people who in Manhattan who would tell you, it used to be I was afraid to be out in certain times, in certain places. But now all of a sudden that's starting to come back after years of people feeling secure. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, that you don't see it. But I'm just saying that the crime statistics show that when they had that policy in place, the crimes were low. Murders were low. Now it's gone. Guess what? The murder rate and all the other robbery rates, all of that is starting to inch back up.
Nobody
can explain, even the new mayor can't explain why it's happening. Of course we know why it's happening.
Stop and frisk
got taken away.
Well, what I'm trying to say here, though, is, well, as I said, that I don't see that. And then again, you know, you had said, okay, that the numbers, so therefore, I guess you're saying that the statistics based upon numbers don't lie. But to that, I would say that they may not lie, but then again, they can be distorted. They can give us a distorted picture of what actually is as opposed to what isn't. I'll put that like that. And then now also, you're basing what you're saying on, you know, speaking positively of what Giuliani did with the unconstitutional stop and frisk situation. You're speaking positively on this based upon what police information is putting out. But then again, today, finally, I almost said finally as if it's finally happening, but no, more people, I would say, and people who ought to know are finally knowing that police do lie, and lie a lot, and lie egregiously. I mean, awfully. I mean, to the point of just shameful. Case in point, the Walter Scott situation. As it was said, when the thing first happened and the cop gave his version of what happened, that is what had been accepted. Point blank, it was accepted. But then when the video came out, not only did the video come out, but also showed what that cop had attempted to do, plant evidence, move, well, as they say on TV, you know, disturb the crime. I kind of chuckle when I say that. But it's not a laughing matter, but it's ludicrous. The cop actually went back and picked up his MF and taser and dropped it by that black guy as if, that's nasty, man. That was just disgusting that he would do that, man. To me, it's on that level. I mean, like, him shooting that person like that because he didn't see that person's humanity. If he hadn't been a white guy, he would never have been shot like that, number one. And then again, number two, that's awful right there. And then for that cop to do that second thing, it just made it nasty, man. Stomach turning. People could throw up from that. I didn't throw up, but it was just, it made me depressed for a while, man, to have seen that.
I watched that video about 5 or 6 times.
Oh, I couldn't.
And you know the shocking thing is to me how slow that brother was running.
Well,
he was almost in slow motion, and I'm thinking to myself, "Damn, what a lazy! You couldn't chase him down to whoop his tail. You gonna just pull the gun? I'm like, you know, son, I didn't even want to chase you down to whoop your tail. I was gonna dang. You know, something, if I was the cop that had stopped him, I would have been like, really, dude? I can walk with a brisk walk and would have caught that brother. I just cannot believe how lazy that cop was.
Well, you can say lazy.
That you didn't want to even do a half-ass job. I was going to pull out my gun because he's running, and that's just the easiest thing to do, is to pull my gun out and shoot him in the back 8-9 times. It's like, really, dude? For real? That's how we're going to do this, officer? I mean, just that to me was just the most, the shockingly lazy, not only are you a scumbag, you a lazy scumbag. Another thing is, you didn't even have to chase the brother. 1 or 2 steps and you would have caught him. The brother was moving in slow. I have never seen the guy. It almost like I thought it was staged because it was so ridiculous to me, James, that the brother was running so damn slow.
But it could have been
like,
also.
My 4-year-old niece could have chased him down.
But it could have been also because he had been already injured, because he had been tased, because it had been put out that like the taser had been discharged, and the officer hadn't been tased, or perhaps the tasing mechanism missed him, but more than likely the guy was injured from the tasing.
You know what? Hold on. The brother has some health issues, and he was an older guy. I think that he ran off because basically, you know, I think he just ran that slow because he was an old guy who couldn't run. But I was just so damn shocked that the cop is like, dude, if anything, the cops should have laughed because that's how slow he was running. The cops should have laughed and like, dude, would you come back here? Get your tail back here. But the dude would actually, he looked like he was running. The way he was running, he was laboring. If he would have ran maybe another 20, 30 yards, he probably would have fell out on his own.
Like
I said, the brother was in poor health.
But the thing is, though, to that police person, that didn't make any difference. Didn't make any difference at all. What made the difference was that, you know, well, basically that fleeing person was black. And this guy, he had the cop had the gun, and he did what he felt he wanted to do. But, okay, we're going to go into a break, and we're going to come right back. We're going to have this song from Carla Page entitled Supernova. So here is Carla Page, Supernova. We'll be right back. Society here on N.D. Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. We just heard a song from Carla Page entitled Supernova. And our caller number here is area code 646 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And I'm surprised that we don't have any callers as of yet. I mean, the way my Facebook friends be blowing up my Facebook page with all their postings about this and that injustice as it pertains to, well, black people, I'm surprised. But the show is still going on, and we'll see what happens. But, yes, going back to what you were saying, Martin, in terms of how slow Walter Scott was running, well, like I said, the situation could have been that he was injured. Then again, too, it could have been health issues. And then again, too, if the cop had any sense of, let's say, decency, we could even throw in the word professionalism per his profession, he would have used his, let's say, also athleticism to chase him down and capture him. But no, he felt that I ain't got to do this for him. I won't do this for him. And he just opened
fire, right.
but he felt that but I will throw 8 bullets after him and in him, and that's what he did. As if he can just do this and it's okay. Murder somebody like that and it's okay. And why? Because he got a badge. He feels he's authorized to do this. We have to keep, well, I should say that we ought to keep that in mind. I know I do. I keep that in mind, that because he feels that he has a badge that he is authorized to do this. And if so, where does he get that mindset that he has that kind of authorization? Where does he get it from? Does it come from his police Brady?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And the thing is, I don't know if we'll ever find the answer to that, but what I will say this, that as many of these dirty, rotten, bad cops that we're seeing, there are probably many more who are doing a great job. And the thing is, people don't understand. Police officer, that job is a job that when you're doing your job correctly, we don't ever hear anything about it.
Well, you know what?
But the first one that doesn't do right, oh, we're going to hear about that.
But, you know, I would say that.
As we should.
And we should. And then going back to your first point, I would say that, like, those cops who do their job as they're supposed to do it, to me, I think that we shouldn't hear anything about it because the person is only doing their job. An example, at my place of work, I do what I'm supposed to do. And I'd be somewhat surprised when somebody tells me, and I mean seriously, thank you. And I'm like,
I'm just doing my job.
But,
yeah,
you know,
I'm just doing my job.
But then again, you know, I can understand it. But like, I'm like, hey, that's not necessary. I appreciate you thanking me, but I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. Granted, I'm aware that a lot of people don't do what they're supposed to do. So maybe because I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, you feel that you have to let me know that it's so great that you do what you're supposed to do. But hey, well, just keep to yourself. You know, that's me. I'm like really, really a down low person anyway. You know, I don't like being in the spotlight. I really don't. I don't like putting myself on front street. It may not sound like that, me being on the radio and all, but but if I have to be, I will be on front street and standing up. But then again, if I don't have to be, I don't need to be. I don't want to be. That's the kind of person I am. So you know, going back
that's
to what you said
understandable.
About, mm-hmm. But
yeah,
like,
that's understandable.
Yes. Well, I'm glad it is. Yes. I guess you probably hadn't heard somebody that before, but I would imagine that a lot of people are like that, but a lot of people are also different. Whatever they do, they want it blasted. Yeah, I did this, but no. Okay, great, you did that. All right. And now what? What you going to do next? You know. But anyway, so those cops who do their job, I mean, let them do their job, and God bless them for that. But,
right.
but something else too. We may be going somewhat off issue here, but it's related to cops doing their job or not doing their job through Facebook, because I don't really watch the news a lot. I really don't. But through Facebook, my Facebook friends primarily, they bring me news or give me news, and what I see them posting, what I now see a lot of postings of are cops who are doing their job and they're being lauded for doing their job, being given big praise. One Facebook friend had posted wherein some woman had been caught shoplifting for food for her family.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that cop,
and the cop gave her some money.
Yeah.
Somebody saw it and they filmed it and.
Yeah, all. But you got to know. I mean, that's the cop going overboard. God bless him for that. He didn't have to do that. He could have just arrested the woman and, you know, bam, it would have been done. Whatever. But no, they want to. You know, to me, I take it like this. After all that has happened and is happening and still is happening, just had another one of these situations just yesterday. I forget where. I really didn't even read it. Maybe I should have, but I didn't want to read it. One of these situations happened again wherein some black person was just shot somewhere, and then again also they were talking about some black woman who was pregnant and, like, thrown down and roughed up, but then now they're saying that the city believes that she had deserved to have been done that way. I didn't read that because I'm tired of stuff. To me, stuff like that is like depressing. But I got sidetracked in saying what I was saying there because it's so many of these things taking place. I mean, they're just
true.
Throwing them at us. But again, going back into what I was saying about, you know, this all of a sudden, you know, these supposedly good deed cops. I mean, to me, it don't smell right, man. To me, it's kind of disgusting to me. You know, in light of, you know, what has happened, and then again to what is happening. You know, it's kind of disgusting.
I know you're a Dalton Thomas over there, James, when it comes to that. But I will say this: I even ran into some good Samaritan cops before.
Well,
and I was shocked. I was like, oh man.
Well,
I mean, this dude.
I hear what you're saying.
You know, he had a crew. He had that Nazi crew cutting everything. I was like, oh shoot, I'm about to get whooped tonight, man.
Mm-hmm. I've even had, like one that I never have forgotten, you know, and I guess in a real sense, well, he even had the Nazi crew cut. He was a lieutenant at that time, but now at this point, he's a captain, and God bless him for that. But he's one of the better guys, I will say. But it's a long story. But the thing was also, I also now know that, like, his birthday is one day before mine, you know, but that's neither here nor there. That's neither here nor there. But then again, he's an individual. But the thing is, though, it's the system of policing that's all jacked up. It's not the individual cop per se. Granted, how can I put this here? Okay, as I said, in a real sense, it is the system of policing that's all jacked up. What do I mean by it's the system of policing that's all jacked up? It's the procedure that the police are given to operate under. That's what's all jacked up. And then again, the police have to, you know, perform these functions that are really, again, going back to use the phrase unconstitutional. And the thing is,
let me ask you a question. What is your answer?
To which?
To how? What do you think we can do to fix the policing problem?
Oh well, it's just not one answer. I mean, you have some people talking about you know, community policing, but then again, in a real sense, we can even, you know, go into the nuances of that. What does that mean? What is community policing? And then too, how will it be carried out? You see, all these things have to be worked out. But then again, that's that. Area of solution. And then we have the thing about, you know, body cameras. But then again, the situation there will the cameras be turned on? Will they work? And then again, will what is filmed be allowed into evidence? You know, there's all kinds of things that come into play. But in essence, what I would say to all of that, the only solution, easy solution, would be just respecting, respecting people as people, and then again, you know, being empathetic, regardless to you being a police person, okay? I mean, you know, a person, but that's just it, being empathetic. And granted, there are some police persons who are on the force. In spite of their guidelines, they go out there doing their job, and they come upon a situation, and they don't go by procedure exactly. They might have a streak of empathy within them during a given situation. And then when they do have that, they apply that. And things don't go to the extreme that they would go if they just nixed their empathy and just went by the law. So in a real sense, it's just a thing about, you know, being empathetic. I mean, that's one factor which is not there. But now, even though I said that, you know, the thing about, you know, being empathetic, you know, that's on the individual police person's level. But then again, what about the higher-up level? Empathy has to be up there, too. Because, see, like they say, you know, manure rolls downhill.
True.
It's
very,
like that.
Very true.
It's like that. But then again, remember what the Bible says. Let justice roll down like waters. That also rolls down. Not just manure, but like justice and fair dealing can also roll down if it is allowed to. But instead, you got those people making decisions who are making, you know, just making decisions for and about people that they care nothing about because of whatever reason. Because of whatever reason, they have no concern, no empathy, no nothing for these people, or their mind is just on making money. So going back to your question as to what should be done, honestly, I don't know. I don't know. But then again, I will say that, you know, if I was in a position to start things rolling, I'd start saying, okay, we need to do this. Or more so, I would tell people whose job it is to bring me ideas. Let me see what your idea is. And, you know, like Obama does. So he says he does. He asks people, you know, bring me what you have concerning what we need to do. I'll look at it, and if I like what I read, we can go with that. But if you bring me something and I read it and it's silly, I'm going to give it back to you, basically. I'm going to ask you, why do you want to do that? You know, you ask questions. But like, evidently, I mean, but then again, you know, again, going back to your question as to what should be done. Okay, we have a constitution, been around for years, and you know, people who are involved with the administration or the administering of law, they're supposed to know this document. But it's like when it comes to us, they don't know it, or it's like they feel it don't apply to us. And then again, therefore, those who make those decisions and send them down, it's like they don't know that we have a constitution that says that you know, you can't do this, that you have to do this. And then after a while, well, like a case in point, take the right after the Civil War, you know, we had the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. Okay.
True.
But then you had those people in positions of authority and power who felt that, you know, okay, let me just put it this way, that they didn't want to be around black people and or didn't want black people around them and in their company and or society, even on buses and trains. So what do? They come up with something called segregation. And then, you know, you had a black person, that Plessy versus Ferguson, you know, brought
everybody.
That. Say what now?
Separate but equal.
Yeah. Okay. But again, remember, before then, all right, that's where I'm going. You know, they put down that ruling, separate but equal. But again, what about the 13th, 14th, or 15th Amendment? But more so, what about the 14th Amendment? That's where, you know, the Equal Protection Clause is in the 14th Amendment. But to render that Plessy versus Ferguson decision in the negative pertaining to black people, they just disregarded the 14th Amendment and said that they didn't say it didn't apply, but what they said was, wait a minute, I got it here, what some clown of a judge has said. I'm calling him a clown, and but like no doubt in the lawyer profession, they would say, no, you can't call him that because that's being disrespectful. Well, hell, you think he wasn't disrespectful to me? And or to my ancestors, not just ancestors, but my mother and father. They live through that.
James, make sure that next time I have a court date, man, you don't show up, because you're going to get me hemmed up, man. You're going to get me hemmed up and locked up.
You say that, huh? Well, no.
I'm seeing you coming in the court screaming, fight the power.
Really?
And my tail sitting up here going, oh, Lord, this white man about to put me in jail for 500 years.
Well, no. But anyway, check this out, right? This Justice Brown, I guess he was the presiding judge there. They say, like, when summarizing, Justice Brown declared, now this is going really against the 14th Amendment. He says that we consider the underlying fallacy of the plaintiff's argument to consist in the assumption that the enforced separation of the two races stamps the colored race with a badge of inferiority. If this be so, it is not by reason of anything found in the act, but solely because the colored race chooses to put that construction upon it. That's what he said. And he's a Supreme Court justice. And therefore, segregation was instituted. Separate but equal became the law of the land because of that clown's court, just totally disregarding the 14th Amendment per the Constitution, number one. And then secondly, just disregarding the feelings of black people primarily, which, again, the 14th Amendment was instituted for black people. Just outrageous. And then again, also, that same guy, Brown, also argued that the recognition of racial difference did not necessarily violate constitutional principle. That's what he said. But you see, there you go into the nuances of what the 14th Amendment does or doesn't say. And then he goes further to say, as long as equal facilities and services were available to all citizens, the commingling of the two races need not be enforced. And then it goes to say further that this provided the legal support for the system of Jim Crow laws. And then it wasn't overruled until Brown versus Board of Education in 1954.
That is true. And do you know that when they passed those separate but equal laws, do you know that there were a lot of blacks who supported them? That supported those separate but equal laws?
Booker T. Washington, a prime one. But again, when I always say this, when we do think in terms of there were blacks who supported such nonsense, we have to consider what kind of blacks they were, what their mindset was. So I think that's important because, you know, there are always, can I say differences, but I wanted to really have used a different word. Well, okay, I'll use the word here, nuances. There are even nuances in the thinking of black people, and we might even say certain kinds of black people. And class really has nothing to do with it. I mean, if they do or do not have money. It's just that kind of mindset. So I can understand, yes, and I do know that Booker T. Washington, as you said, you know, went along with that, with that BS. But then again, there were many blacks who didn't go along with that and also didn't go along with Booker T. Washington either. It was a big clash even within the ranks of black people concerning that particular system. So it don't surprise me, again, but that's the way it is. Even right now, you know, we have blacks who I guess, and then again, you sound like that you agree with the stop and frisk. But again, I do not, because primarily I say that, and then again, you have said that, you know, you're more so a libertarian than not. That reminds me of a brother I was talking to in my workplace. He and I were having a discussion. I forget what the discussion was on. I think it may have been on Ebola, when Ebola was big up in the news, and the quarantining of that nurse was or wasn't going to take place. And he was saying that you know, him, you know, being, you know, all in line with the equal, the libertarian thought process, that he feels that, you know, that should be her right to not want to be quarantined. But then, you know, the thing about, you know, general safety, that has to play a part too. But then now, in terms of like what you and I are talking about, you know, the stop and frisking, the stop and frisk situation, we have a constitution that outlaws such practice. But again, when it came to us, again, when it came to black people, it's like the Constitution was overrode or just pushed aside. The Constitution need not apply to niggas. That's what it seems like they had decided to say, which is big wrong, big wrong, big wrong, big wrong. And then again, not only that, but it also caused, how can I put it, a lot of difficulty in those communities where such a program was established. And they talk about, you know, police and community relationship. That right there can't help but destroy a so-called police and community relationship, because in a real sense, that itself does give the police the perception. Is that the right word? Give people the view that the police are a occupying force, or do seem to be an occupying force, because in a real sense, I can't come out my door without some police person seeing me and just feel that, oh, I can stop him. I better stop him because I know he got something. You know, no, he can't think like that. The Constitution says you can't do that. But again,
well, you know, something, James. Speaking of the occupying army, what do you feel about? And I know you say you don't watch the news, but apparently there's been an up spike of murders in Baltimore recently, and apparently what's going on that some of the community has been interviewed by the media, and apparently the police are basically just riding by in some cases, just letting stuff happen. Apparently there are some activists on the ground in Baltimore who every, you know, when police come in the neighborhood to make a call, these guys jump out and they surround the cop. They don't approach him aggressively or anything. They just surround him and video him and basically, you know, basically verbally harass the cop. So now the cops have basically said, you know something, we're basically not going to do our jobs. Apparently arrests are down 50% in Baltimore. A lot of people aren't upset about that. And apparently a lot of people are saying the criminals definitely aren't upset about that. And now they're saying that the crime rate and murder rate in Baltimore has just gone up. This past weekend, the number of shootings and robberies alone is just off. It's off the chart.
But apparently
they interviewed one of these cops. You know, they did the thing where they cover your voice and your face up.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said that the cops now, they're so afraid of doing their job, because they're afraid that they're going to get arrested if they do anything, you know, to make a mistake or do something that appears that they did something they shouldn't, that they're afraid now of even arresting people. So now they're just they're basically saying, you know, let them do whatever they want to do.
But you know, concerning that, first off, I would have to say that in a real sense, I don't know what's going on there. But also, knowing history of police, let me put it this way: knowing police history of police infiltrations. I mean, again, I don't know what's happening. That's just like, you know, during the 1960s and 1970s, during the Black consciousness movements. You know, even then, people didn't know what was going on, what was happening. But then later on, it came out through the Freedom of Information Acts that our police agencies actually provoked a lot of those situations that were taking place back then. And the thing is, a lot of black people and black men and women both of consciousness, well, the killing is one thing. The killings are one thing. And then again, going to jail, have been sent to jail on trumped up charges because some police provocateur was in their group and said that he or she did this or did that, when they really hadn't done a damn thing. And you know what? We still have black men and women from the 1960s in jail right now because of their political consciousness. But no doubt this is another issue here. But then going to what you asked me, again, I have to say that, you know, I don't know right now because it's too early to tell. We won't know until what is revealed, what is to be revealed, will be revealed. But into what you said, you had said something about how on the news there was this guy whose face was not shown, blackened out. We can think about we don't know what happened in South Africa, but we might recall having seen that movie that Denzel was in, Cry Freedom, when they were perpetuating the apartheid system, they would get some black man, you know, to go in some room and then look at somebody whom they have brought in and say, you know, is that him? You know, the person making the accusation was never seen. The thing is, it could have been, even if there was a person making the accusation, the police were saying this person said this or said that. But again, going back to what I said earlier, we have to know it. Well, it's unfortunate that we can't trust the police. But then again, a lot of people for a long time have been knowing this, that you can't trust those people because they lie like rugs, man. I mean, even in my own personal situation, the bastards lied on me big time, man. Those clowns, they beat on me. They beat on me. Well, first off, they arrested me illegally, and then they beat on me, and they charged me with harassment. No. Charged me with resisting arrest. And then the sheet that they gave the judge, an official piece of paper, they wrote on there that I had to be drugged to my cell, kicking and screaming. That's what they wrote. Three times.
Dang, James. I know you was old thug like that, man.
No. That's what they sought to portray me as. And it was just so messed up, even the way they did it, Martin. What they also did was, okay, there was this other guy from my town also, all right, I got locked up with another guy. And the charge basically was riding in a stolen vehicle, which wasn't stolen. It was a rented car that the guy had taken. He left his girlfriend. His girlfriend got mad and called the cop and said the car was stolen, which it wasn't stolen. Anyway, the cops came upon me and that guy in that car, and therefore we were arrested based upon that. Okay, me and the guy that was in the car. Now, when I went before the judge with another guy from my town who I also know who was there because he had beat up some jewelry store owner, tried to rob a jewelry store, and beat the guy up, a guy well known in my town for years. Even I knew the guy. And I thought, This guy is just a real maniac to do something like that to that old man. But anyway, they put me in front of the judge with that guy. You know, so therefore, the judge got my file.
Oh, Lord.
You know, yeah. The judge got my file in his hand, plus he got the file of this guy in his hand. And, you know, a judge is going to read, you know, both situations, and he sees me and him together. He thinks, oh, these two dirtbags. You know, it was all fucked up. And
James, you done fell in with a bad crowd, man. I hate to tell you, we're going to have to put you in there. From 5 to 10.
But the thing was, though, that's what those cops had also did that purposely. They're devious. Can't trust them. So, therefore, I said all that to say that I don't believe nothing that they say. And then again, these reports that like the police put out, you got to know. Well, me being me, I'm not believing that. No, I'm not. Not at all. So, no. I'm not trusting what they say, not until I see it and or until something else is revealed. So going into what you were saying about, you know, how they're talking about, you know, murder rate is spiking up and all that. And, you know, but also aside from that, you know, there was something that I wanted to have brought out also about policing. You know, they talk about how, you know, communities ask for more police. And me, I really wonder about that because I'm thinking to myself, they talk about, I mean, in New York here, they talk about the community. Let's say someplace like Harlem. Let's take Harlem. We say Harlem, people of Harlem asking for more police. I don't think so. If anything, they're asking for less police. But like to let them tell it, well, people in the community, they're asking for more police. That's got to be nonsense. But the thing that I think about, okay, we're coming up on like 2 minutes left, so we got to start wrapping up. But like the thing I think about, you know, I'll put it this way. Society needs police. Police are needed in any society. I do agree with that. And communities exist in societies. That's a fact. So being that police are needed in society, it's up to those in society to decide what kind of policing they do need. But again, we know that comes from up top, not from below. But like, we have to have those people in place up top who have empathy for those whom they are to govern. Would you agree with that?
Well,
or?
I agree with you. And I will just say this in closing. Since I live in a state that believes in the Second Amendment, come in my door, I'm not calling the police. I'm calling the coroner.
I hear what you're saying, but, you know, you got to have some place of thought in there, but I understand exactly what you're saying. So we have to sign off now because it's at that closing hour. So, Martin, we'll be back next week. And, people, thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Yes. Urban Society signing off.
In the way from here. I'm flying high above the clouds. Life's great, I'm straight, living like a boss. And you already know. First class flight, yep. Trips to Jamaica. Tailor made denim, pocket full of paper.
Damn.
Bought Molly weed, scent blowing on exotic. Maybach Benz, bad bitch from the traffic. Monday I'm in Paris, Tuesday I'm in Cali. Wednesday night I'm in Hawaii, Thursday morning I'm in Tally.
Yeah.
Top flow, presidential panoramic views. I'm winning like Charlie Sheen, ain't no way that I can lose. Louis Vuitton, luggage, infinity swimming pools. I'm drinking that rosé, you niggas be sipping brews.
Hold
up. I don't mean to brag on them like champagne bottles. I be popping tags on them. Got the 7-tray candy painted with the rag on it. Dashboard got a whole lot of cash on it. Shout out that nigga Nelly, bitch, I speak that country grammar. Hall of Fame, nigga. Joe Montana. Up in the way from here. I'm flying high above the clouds. Lights straight, I'm straight, living like a boss. And you already know, I'm about my paper. I keep a whole lot of money on me. I got the rosé on ice, taking first class flights. It feels so good to be living that life.
I got my bitch right clean, the mother hoes can't stand them. Black and white Charger, that's a Kung Fu Panda. Slide through the hood. Foreign made NASCAR, lying in the engine, so I call that Madagascar. I give them something to remember. King of the jungle, all them bitches call me Simba. I'm on that white cliff, man, I'm gone to November. Getting pussy and money, the only thing on my agenda. Causing dates on my calendar, all up in Canada. I hop out that Camaro, then I come back in a Challenger. Click, click, pose for the camera. I work for myself, bitch, I don't need no manager. My weed from California, my bitches from overseas. I'm trying to fill up rivers by any nature I'm in. Y'all bitches be counting zeros, I'm adding up commas, and I ride with a cannon like I'm DJ Drama.
Up in the way from here.